I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Tuesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Great to be with you on a beautiful Tuesday here in the city of Houston. We are with you till 10 o'clock. We appreciate you getting up with us, making the show a part of your day. The show is Payne and Pendergast. I am the Pendergast part of that. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. He is Seth Payne, whose patience and forgivingness, willingness to forgive, a 9.22 ERA. He was the tip of the spear that allowed Lance McCullers to stay in the Astros' circle of trust yesterday prior to his fourth start of the season last night. And Seth, dare I say, Lance McCullers revealed you to be a soothsayer, essentially. You were very patient with his poor performance early in the season and said, whoa, 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 three games does not a season make. Let's see what he does this time out. And he damn near pitched a no-hitter last night.
And we saw hints in those first three games, which I'll remind everybody, he's coming off of Tommy John surgery.
Where, that's right. I forgot.
The little no big deal, right? Yeah. I feel like everybody thought because he played well in that exhibition game, they're like, oh, that's it. That's the end of it, right? You just come out and you just play. That's awesome. So he's working his way through. He's changed up his pitch selection. He's relying more heavily on the changeup than he ever did and less on his curveball. And he's had to tweak some things to do it. I think the most encouraging thing last night was that Maldonado and he had a conversation after the last game, that meltdown in the fourth inning, and Maldonado just said, hey, let's just go through one game where you don't shake me off every single time and let me call the game. I do my homework, let me call the game. So Lance shook him off maybe three or four times. Maldonado, I think, jokingly said that he usually shakes him off about 140 times. And they got the results they wanted. They had a no-hitter through the seventh inning. Bregman missed on a play that maybe he could have made even if he had gloved it, but it would have been a hard one to make. But I feel bad for Bregman because Bregman feels awful about it, but I'm also secretly thankful because I don't need Lance testing his arm into the eighth and ninth inning coming off of Tommy John. The fact that was broken up in the seventh inning, I'm like, you know what? Seventh inning, one hitter, beautiful. Let's get your no-hitter later on in the year.
Well, I mean, except that it got handed over to Josh James, who damn near burned the entire house down. I mean,
Josh James is going to be the best starter this team has ever seen, Sean. You need to be patient with him.
It's 6-0, and Josh James gives up a home run to make it 6-1. Then he gets out of that inning, and I'm like, okay, now I'm going to go to bed. You know, it's 11:10 or something like that. You know, like, okay, I got to go to bed now. I got to get up at 3:55 in the morning. So I go in, I shower before I go to bed, so I don't have to shower when I get, you know, so my morning routine is nice and concise. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so I shower, and by the time I get out of the shower, I do the quick check of Twitter before I go to bed to make sure I'm not missing any late news. And my Twitter timeline is melting down over Josh James just burning the house down in the ninth inning of that game. And I'm like, crap, now I got to turn on the TV before I go to bed. Are you kidding me? So Josh James doesn't need to get anywhere near. I don't want to turn this into a Josh James thing. The Astros won last night, so let's celebrate that. The Astros won a baseball game last night. But damn, Josh James, man, some of us morning hosts need some sleep, dude.
They're off the schneid. Look, this is we knew this. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I think everybody knew this. The strong start by all these rookie relievers But then also I think the strong start and the strong showings in the preseason by Josh James and several of these other young guys, it wasn't going to stick for all of them. Some of them were going to, you know, but okay, between Framber and Josh James, man, if Framber ends up being a really good everyday starter,
you're right,
then I'll take batting 500 between those two. I'll take that every day of the week. I'm so happy with Framber right now. The Josh James, I think some people made the mistake of just thinking that because of some promise over the last couple of years that, oh, it's just a matter of time before Josh James turns into this mega stud. You got to remember, he's not some young phenom. He's 26, 27 years old. We're probably seeing who Josh James is.
Seth, you're right. If someone had told you coming into the season that out of Framber and Josh James, and throw Christian Javier in there if you want to, like you will get a okay, we feel good about this guy each time out, feeling out of one of those three guys, or even throw a fourth guy in there if you want to, throw Urquidy in there when he comes back. I don't care. Coming into the season, you'd say just one of those guys is going to turn into what Wade Miley was for most of last year, before Wade Miley turned into a batting practice machine. You would say, yes, I would do. Yes, I would sign right now, because you felt like we got Verlander, we got Greinke, McCullers is coming back from Tommy John. Yeah, are you kidding me? That I could go four deep and feel good about four guys? Absolutely. The thing that's changed the calculus for this team is Verlander's not there anymore. They don't have a guy that you can throw out there every 5 days. They had two of them last year. That's how you win 107 games. You have two guys that you feel like, we throw them out there every 5 days, and we're winning the freaking game. Yeah. They don't have – I mean, Greinke's been better the last couple starts, but they really don't have anybody like that this year, and that's how you get to be 7-9 16 games into the season.
And that's where – but it also is in this weird year where pitchers are getting injured all over the place.
Yeah.
In some respects, I'd like to, at the end of the season, be grateful for the slow starts by Lance McCullers and Zach Greinke, because I feel like maybe that ends up, knock on wood, keeping them healthy somehow. I don't know. Everything's weird right now. I don't, like, if McCullers was out there and just rifling everything with perfection, you know, the way, and he had all the velocity that he usually does, and maybe he'd re-injure his elbow. I don't know. Like everybody else's. The injury rates in the first week of the Major League Baseball season were astronomical.
It was crazy.
Compared to what they typically are. Astronomical. Yeah. And we haven't really seen a sign of it letting up. So I'll just let's cruise on through. If Framber ends up being a nice little revelation, if Urquidy comes in and can be steady and solid and consistent, and then eventually the bats will come around. I'm still convinced of it, Sean. I'm still convinced that the bats will come
around.
Last
night, it was the most deceptive six runs you're ever going to see. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the five runs they scored in that one inning, they didn't hit a single ball hard. You had two seeing eye singles. Brantley hit a double, double was a bloop down the left field line inside the foul line. Set, they had a catcher's interference. There were two errors. There was a walk.
Reddick dials up those catcher's interferences.
No, like he does. Money. I wish.
So
I'm going to give him
credit for that. Yeah.
Okay. So it wasn't the most. Hey, look, they won a game. It's been five games since that's happened. So 6:10. PM start tonight, and the Giants were just with the doctor order. Yeah, we get an earlier start tonight.
This is Seth. I've been reading this book, Why We Sleep, about just a lot of sleep science.
Yeah.
And now, you know, usually I wake up at like 3:30 a.m. so I can listen to Extra and the audio version. But it's leaving me deeply conflicted about my choice of career.
Getting up this early?
The guy whose job involves staying up late to watch baseball games and then getting up extremely early to talk about it. Yeah, it's not the sleep science research is in. It's not good for you.
Well, you better be ready for the next 48 hours. We get Rockets at 1 o'clock today, Astros at 6, Rockets at 3 o'clock tomorrow, Astros at 8 o'clock tomorrow.
It's beautiful. Well, except for the Astros at 8 o'clock.
It's glorious. Who cares? Yeah. It's glorious. It's sports. We got it back.
I'll sleep when I'm dead, Sean.
Yeah, sleep when dead, baby.
Give me whatever the formula stimulant the kids are taking these days, give it to me. Give me some of that Death Wish coffee I hear so much about.
We get a BLAC start tonight, so that's good.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
That's the juice I need. I don't need drugs when I got BLAC.
You just take that BLAC.
Shoot him straight into my veins.
Got it. I'm going to freebase me some BLAC, baby. All right, so we're off and running on a Tuesday. One of the wildest days yesterday that you're going to see in college football. Big swings, sketchy reporting. It had all the staples of college football. Are we going to get college football this fall? We'll discuss it next. Texans training camp is happening now. We've got you covered. We will, in the next segment, Peter King did about as deep a dive as you're going to do into the day of a life of a coach, a veteran player, a rookie player, at certainly the most odd, if not historic, training camp that we're ever going to see in our lifetimes. We'll go through that at the bottom of the hour. I went and got my my first COVID test yesterday. I'll share my experience. I did,
really,
dude.
It does look, I used to make jokes about how it's going to look like E.T., in the movie at the end of E.T. For you kids, it was a don't go watch it. It's gonna disappoint you in how what your parents used to be impressed by in terms of special effects. Yeah.
No, that was the best movie of the year that year was E.T.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, you go back and look at any of those old Spielberg movies like Extraterrestrial. What was the other one
about? Close Encounters of the Third Kind, baby. Yeah.
You watch the special effects and you're like, oh, that is clearly just a plastic model.
I could do that on my Mac right now.
Is that a junior high science project that they just filmed? Yeah,
right.
It's really bad. But anyway, at the end of E.T., they enclose this whole area like it's a biohazard site with plastic tunnels and everything. From the pictures I've seen, it looks like a lot of the NFL facilities look kind of like that.
Yeah, it didn't look quite like that yesterday, but I'll say this. Not very easy to just walk onto the property like you used to during training camp.
I can't just walk tall and look like a football player that belongs there.
You
just
might be able to
because
you actually look like a football player, but for all the civilians that tried to do it back in the day, that's hard to do now.
At any NFL or like pro sports event, generally – that's my tactic, is I just look like I belong and just breeze right through. I give a nod to whoever's, making $12 an hour to work for the weekend.
The nod is big.
See you later, bud.
The nod and the confidence of the nod are huge when you're just trying to waltz into somewhere.
And great to see you again. Hey, great to see you again.
Again.
All right, bye-bye.
Seth, the devil is in the details. You are a genius, my friend. All right, so college football, not exactly run by geniuses these days. Here's where we're at with college football. If you're just waking up, everybody assumed that we were going to go into yesterday with the Big Ten canceling their season, the Pac-12 immediately following, and then we would see what would happen with the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12. But I think most people thought on Sunday, at least, Seth, that once the Big Ten jumped in the pool, that by Tuesday we would not have any college football.
Yeah.
Quite the opposite. We now have a big standoff to where the Big Ten... at first it was couched as a vote of the schools that was a 12-2 vote with only Iowa and Nebraska dissenting to cancel the season. It seems like now that was more of an informal poll because there are a lot of other schools, certainly a lot of other coaches, Ryan Day, Jim Harbaugh, Scott Frost among them, James Franklin at Penn State, Big Ten coaches who have said, we want to play the season. I'm going to fight for my players to play this season, to the point where they've threatened to just go barnstorming playing other schools if the Big Ten votes not to play football. So there's that. So there's a lot of dissension now within the Big Ten. The Pac-12 is sort of sitting on the sidelines watching. They have a meeting today. And meanwhile, the Big 12 is on the fence as well. The SEC and ACC appear to be dug in. They want to play football. This is a fascinating, fascinating standoff of five conferences that at times operate like the mob, like the five families, and at times operate like it's Game of Thrones and everybody's got their guns pointed at each other. It's an incredibly fascinating story.
Yeah, you know what we just had, Sean? We had a domino theory. Just like back during the Vietnam War, there was this domino theory that like, oh, if Vietnam goes to communism, then all these other Southeast Asian and Asian countries will go to communism. And it turned out to not be the case. And I think likewise, we kind of did the same thing. We just generalized and said, oh, wow, if the Big Ten goes down, then all of them are going to go down. And then you realize, oh, wait a second. They all have their own sets of concerns. They all have their own different biases, and the Big Ten is going to be separate from the SEC and the ACC. One of the best things I saw on social media in a long time was yesterday somebody did the little thing where they show a video and they label different people different things. So they were showing the Jerry Maguire scene.
Best.
Where Jerry Maguire is trying to get everybody to go with him as he's walking out of the office, and they labeled him the Big Ten.
Yes.
But meanwhile, like Bob Sugar is the SEC. He's just kind of smirking.
Who's coming with me? Who's coming with me?
Nobody's going with
him. And Renee Zellweger.
Renee Zellweger was a Pac-10, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
God, it was so good. I need to find that and retweet it. It was really, really funny. But that's kind of what it was, is I think everybody expected the Big Ten – to be the first jumping off point and everybody to follow. And that's clearly not the case. And so Seth, the at this point, the things that are controlling college football right now, maybe more than anything, have nothing to do with football. It's politicians, because these are big state schools, a lot of them. So politicians, including the president, have gotten involved, weighing in on this. And then a condition called myocarditis. Is it myocarditis?
I've always pronounced it since yesterday when I learned of its existence.
For the last 23 hours? So it is a side effect. I'm sure some of you have heard the news about the Red Sox player that had an inflamed heart from the coronavirus. There was the impassioned letter from a mother of an Indiana player whose son contracted COVID-19 and now has an inflammation of the heart. It's a rare condition that's believed to be linked to it's been oftentimes linked to the flu and other things, and now it's linked to the coronavirus.
Yeah. Well, and it's also any kind of acute viral infection. And it's a contributing factor a good percentage of the time whenever a high school or college athlete dies suddenly or has a heart attack suddenly on the court or on the field. A lot of times it's because myocarditis was there. So it's this is the extreme version where we give the disclaimer. I'm no doctor, but this is where all the administrators from these various conferences are trying to get all the information they can. You know, and at some places, like they're saying within the ACC or at University of Virginia, for all the positive tests they've had, they haven't found any myocarditis, where at other places they're saying they've found a good amount of them. So some of the schools now are scrambling to try to figure out, okay, if we have a positive test, then we'll screen, we'll do an EKG, we'll be sure that the kid doesn't have myocarditis before he's allowed to return to play, which seems reasonable to me. I guess the scary thing is that without that screening, it looks like, at least in some of the samples they've done, half of the kids that test positive but then have myocarditis didn't have any COVID symptoms at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there could be kids that had COVID a month or so ago that test negative now but still have myocarditis. So I think moving forward, for the schools that have the ability to do it, they're going to be doing some cardio screening before they send these kids out there. But you can understand too, right? And I talked about this yesterday. Look, I'm kind of in the mode of, look, these kids are adults. You know, they would call them kids, but they're adults. And if they want to play and if they're getting tested for COVID twice a week and there's reasonable safety measures, then okay, let's let them do it. But you can understand these administrators in the Big Ten who are listening to the mother of this kid from Indiana that's struggling with a heart condition. It's hard to ignore that emotional plea from a mother, isn't it?
It is. It's also hard to ignore the emotional plea from your attorneys. And I think that's where the motivation is with these schools. Seth, I don't want to paint these administrators and school presidents and athletic directors to be just these heartless mercenaries. But let's be real. Most of these guys, gals as well, are more afraid of the litigation that could come from a myocarditis case than they are the actual well-being of the kid. I mean, that's just... the reality of the situation. I think what's interesting about it is that we're sitting and we're talking, okay, this is going to put these kids in danger. It's rare, but it could put these kids in danger, kind of whistling past the graveyard of the danger they already put themselves in the very sport that they play. You know what I mean? That we green light them going out into a sport where concussions are a regular thing and broken bones are a regular thing. The very small cases where kids get life-changing injuries. I think of the LeGrand kid from Rutgers who's been in a wheelchair. Like, this is an inherently dangerous sport. And so I guess on the one side you go, well, why add one more thing like the coronavirus and myocarditis? On the other hand, it's like, well, you're already playing with fire just by playing football.
But I guess that for me, that falls into the category of, okay, there are risks that are known and that there are risks that are unknown. And I think anytime you throw a risk that's unknown at a situation, it's natural to want to pull back a little bit and say, oh, wait a second, we're talking about inflammation of the heart now, are we?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's not a risk that I knew anything about,
sure,
you know, a few months ago.
I think, and this is where it goes back to, and we're going to talk more about this throughout the show. I think this is where it goes back to what I said yesterday, and this is what I think the Big Ten is going to do. I have no inside information if this is the case, but this is what would make the most sense. Postpone the start of your season to be in line with the SEC and the Pac-12 and everybody else. Move it back to September 26 and assess for another month or so as kids get back on campus.
Sean, we need to identify a situation here where I think I tend to be the more cynical of the two of us. I think that this is a rare and unique situation where you're the more cynical one. I do think that when you're in charge of these, and a lot of the people that are administrators at colleges or working in college athletics. Well, take your father, for instance.
Yeah.
Your father was an athletic director at UConn for years.
Yes.
I think there's both a financial side to it, but there is also the human side where you do feel like you're a guardian of these young humans, in that especially when you're confronted with the mother of one of them giving you a tearful testimony about how it's been. I mean, it's hard to ignore that side, you know, that emotional side of it when you're making the decision.
Yeah, not all of them. I don't want to paint them all with the same brush, but I don't want to ignore the litigation aspect to this as well.
Yeah. I just think, you know, Mr. Pendergast, who, happy birthday yesterday.
Yeah.
He seems like an extreme people person.
He is. He would not be one of the ones that would be placing the litigation ahead of the human element to it.
Yeah.
That's why he wasn't in it for as long as some, probably.
He foresaw this.
He wasn't nearly heartless enough.
You know what? He's 15 years ago, he wrote a missive about how, like, listen, at some point here, we're going to have a pandemic, and I don't think you all are
who's
are
coming
prepared
with
to
me?
Respond
who's
to
coming
it.
With me?
I'm out.
Who's coming with me? All right. Fain and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday here on Sports Radio 610. I mentioned Peter King. Peter King did a really interesting deep dive yesterday on a day in the life of a Houston Texan, and it's different, this training camp. There's no doubt about it. Which differences stood out the most to Seth Payne, someone who's been through nearly a dozen training camps? We'll do that next. Texans training camp is happening now, and you know how I know that? Because Peter King did an article, a long form, well, his weekly column, Football Morning in America, was a super deep dive on a day in the life of a Houston Texan at training camp. And you know how I know training camp is going on right now? Because in this story, Seth, Bill O'Brien is in the building by like 5:20 a.m. Which means if he's listening, he's listening on the radio.com app. Shout out to Coach O'Brien.
Yeah, thanks for listening on the radio.com app.
Radio.com Rewind as well.
We should just start acting like he's endorsing the show and stuff and see until we get a cease and desist letter. I don't think he'll actually sue us, but he'll send out a cease and desist.
When Bill O'Brien listens to Payne and Pendergast, he listens on the radio.com app.
Payne and Pendergast, sponsored by Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, that would be extreme. This was a really interesting deep dive, Seth, that they did, starting with, 4:30 in the morning, Jeff Kaplan, who's the infections control officer for the team, getting up and getting the text message from the COVID testing company. He basically gets a spreadsheet with everybody's name on it, and it tells you positive or negative. And the Texans have had zero positive tests so far as a team.
They're batting 1,000. I'll say that in this article, Peter King points out that Jeff Kaplan doesn't usually need his alarm clock. And I don't think most people – I don't like getting those test results. Like, it would be hard to sleep knowing those test results are already in your inbox. I would prefer that they send them out at like 5:30 a.m. or something. But Kaplan's got – he probably wakes up – I bet he wakes up at like 3 a.m. every night and forces himself to stay in bed, but knows that those results are sitting there waiting for him, and that he could get an hour and a half jump on it if there was a positive.
Do you think that Jeff Kaplan has a bonus structure tied to coronavirus – positivity percentage?
Gosh, I did not hear you say bonus. I thought you said something else, and I'm like, yeah, I'm sure most guys do in the morning, right?
4:30.
I thought you were asking me if he had morning wood. I'm like, probably. No. I don't know. He's staying hydrated, especially. Yeah. So
this is a long segment. I need something to kill some time. let's go here.
What did you actually
No,
ask
I was me? Just I mean, I got thinking about Jeff Kaplan. Is, you know, Jeff Kaplan is very emotionally invested in this. I'm wondering, and it just crossed my mind, as the infections control officer, I wonder if he has a bonus structure in which, if the Texans continue this perfect rate of coronavirus negativity, that he gets a little bonus at the end of the year.
No,
he may get both. I don't know.
Like,
he may get excited. If they,
all of a
he
sudden.
Might get excited if they don't have any coronavirus.
I've got a structure for you, Sean. It's a scaffolding in my pants. I doubt it.
I doubt it too. I just thought,
I think if they had more time to come up with it, they could have, like, hey, Jeff, we're going to rewrite your contract. contract, you're going to be based exclusively on the absence of positive tests. Let's say you're making $100,000 a year. For each positive test, shall kill you.
This is, as you know, before I got into radio, I was in sales for 15 years. Yeah. And Jeff Kaplan, I'm assuming, has been in medicine or in the medical field for his entire career. This is a salesperson who, I'm someone who needs to be incented to do anything. Yeah. Kaplan's probably like, I've been in medicine my whole life. Like, this is, we took a little thing called the Hippocratic Oath. I don't know that he's a doctor necessarily, but you know, like.
He's not. He was falsely called. Well, as far as, unless he went to medical school when I wasn't paying attention, but they called him a doctor in some article a few weeks ago. Yeah. I don't believe he's an actual doctor.
So Kaplan's like, no, I do this because it's my job and out of the goodness of my heart, Mr. Mercenary sales guy. Yeah. So Seth, the gist of this article is that it's a long day for the trainers, the people that are responsible for keeping the stadium clean. It's a long day for Bill O'Brien and for Jack Easterby and the staff. And it's actually a more efficient day for the players, whereas players used to be in the building for 14 hours with a lot of inefficient downtime. This has actually created what seems to be, for each player, a much more efficient way of doing things.
You know what? And as I was reading through this, I thought about the way things are done at colleges. Because at college, once they started getting strict about the 20-hour rule, that you're only allowed to have a certain amount of time with athletes, colleges had to get super efficient. I can remember going back and working out at my old school for the first time after they'd gotten super strict about everything. I was like, holy crap, this is just, they're in, they're warming up, all of a sudden they're lifting, and then they're on to the next, and they're stretching, and then they're off to the training room. And it makes a whole lot of sense. You're getting the most work done, and then guys can go get off their feet and recuperate and do their classwork and everything. I think this is a little bit more of that dose of college where you got to be as efficient as possible. You're trying to keep guys, you know, away from others and trying to get everything done. In a normal training camp, the worst part of it that JJ touches on here is that there's just so much time sitting around waiting for the coaches to get their crap together. Like, because they're watching film so they can yell at you about something later. And then, so you're sitting around, you eat. Which is kind of the pain in the ass of it, but it's also kind of the nice part of it that these guys are missing out on now is that that's a time where you form bonds with your teammates and there's a lot of camaraderie. There's not a lot of camaraderie under this current situation.
You're right. There's a yin and a yang. You're sacrificing the camaraderie of being around your teammates, because I think the other thing that's very clearly illustrated in this is they are doing most things, they being the players, are doing most things in small groups. They're coming in and doing conditioning in small groups. They're doing film in small groups, obviously, with their positions. There's really only 1 hour out of the entire day where they're all together doing a walkthrough at this stage of training camp. And the quote from JJ is this. This is a quote Peter King got from JJ at 10 o'clock at night after the whole day was over. And JJ's back at his house. He's in his pool. He's aqua cycling to flush out his legs, according to
JJ's
this.
JJ's like, normally I'd be in the bubble doing a workout for the Hard Knocks camera crew at this point. But now I actually get to work out at home in my pool.
By myself with Rocky music playing underneath it. Yeah, so here was his quote. JJ said, Peter King asked him how he feels about the strangest training camp of his high school, college, or pro career. JJ said this. I mean, if I'm being perfectly honest, it's somewhat nice from an actual football standpoint. Think about a normal training camp day. You're in the building from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. You get a whole bunch of meetings. Now we're very efficient in our meetings. We get things done. Nobody's screwing around. Everybody's locked in. It's just really been good with our Zoom meetings. Just purely being in the comfort of your home, doing your Zoom meeting, and not having to rush into the stadium early in the morning. It's a nice feature. Yeah. He likes it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of elements to this where I think people are realizing in any walk of life, you've realized, okay, what was essential and what was not, and where was I wasting time and how was I not? Who knows? I mean, I would imagine a year from now we'll be back to our old inefficient ways.
Do you think we will totally? Well, specific to football, they're keeping it focused on this. I mean, I feel like there's some things they're going to keep doing even after they get the green light to go back to the old ways if they want to.
I think a lot of it comes down to how responsible are the people in your organization. You know, I mean, like you were saying, you're in sales. You know the salespeople that can be trusted to just be autonomous and out on their own and doing whatever versus the ones that actually need to be in the building so you can keep them under your thumb.
Yep.
I think if you got a mature organization, and maybe with the veterans at least, that can just show that they're keeping up with their work, that, yeah, there's a lot of benefit, especially in football. And pro football is so weird. It took them so long to catch on to the fact that, beating people into the earth isn't necessarily the best way to keep them healthy for 6 months. So they're football's starting to act like other sports where they're trying to focus on rest and recuperation more so than they used to. I think a lot of this might end up sticking, especially for training camp. Because for veteran players, guys that are 30 years old, training camp is a whole lot of just needless drudgery that wears guys down where it doesn't need to be done that way.
Yeah, you may be getting a better J.J. Watt coming off a training camp like this than you would be off of a normal training camp. You know, just for mentally more than anything else, just like just having not gone through the inefficiencies of a normal training camp. Some other interesting things in here, Seth. O'Brien brings up versatility right away. No big surprise. He brings that up a lot. But he brings up how important it'll be this season because you could lose five guys to the virus in 1 week, and then you've got to go find other guys. You have to have guys on your roster that maybe in a pinch might need to do some things. I like the one name they brought up as an example. Did
yes.
you see this?
Our guy.
Friend of the show. And whose father is a friend of the show. Colin Gillespie was brought up as an example. He's being used at running back, tight end, and in an empty backfield set.
Yes,
I am here for the empty backfield Colin Gillespie formation.
And O'Brien, now listen, I'm gonna say this, a little point of contention with Bill O'Brien because he almost brought Colin Gillespie up as a break glass in case of emergency guy. He said, "What if we had a bunch of guys that are running backs all of a sudden on the COVID list? We got to have somebody fill in for him." Hey, listen, buddy, you should be having Colin Gillespie fill in on the reg.
Damn right.
Epidemic or no epidemic. The stuff I saw out of this kid, the fluidity out of the backfield, his pass-catching ability, all of these things, as well as his special teams ability, I need to see me some more Colin Gillespie.
Hell yeah.
They used him more towards the end of the year. At the very end of the season last year, they used him as a fullback a couple times on some key plays. Deshaun's long run. I'm trying to remember
which game. The Buffalo game. It was the Buffalo
game.
Right. The touchdown
run
where
.
Deshaun carried those guys into the end zone. Colin Gillespie threw the block that sprung him.
Yeah. You know what they did? They rope-a-doped him a little bit. They lined up in a look that the Patriots had used versus the Bills, and where the Patriots were running inside with a fullback all the time, and they rope-a-doped him and went outside with the quarterback. And Colin Gillespie was a part of that, had a nice run downfield. I do think, honestly, all jokes aside, I thought that Colin Gillespie was going to be a bigger part of this offense this year with or without the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that maybe there will be more opportunities to use him this year if somebody tests positive or something. But so far, knock on wood, Sean, I think the biggest lesson we've learned about athletes in quasi-semi-bubbles is that I think they've been way more responsible than a lot of people expected them to be.
Yeah.
If you look at baseball and football so far, everybody's going home at night, and yet a lot of these teams have zero positive test cases or just minuscule positive test cases. A lot of the schools and pro teams, it's been fewer than 2% testing positive at the initial phase. And I think that for all the hand-wringing over, these guys are all going to be going out and partying all night, I think very few have, to the point where it's become notable when guys do, and almost all of them are on the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah. We're looking at you, Clevenger and Plesac. Yeah, that's quite the story. We'll get to that.
But back to Gillespie, I'm sorry, because I don't want to let this go. Gillespie, the other day when I was in on Bill O'Brien's Zoom call, I wasn't planning on asking a question. I wanted to let all the hardcore journos do it. But just in case somehow I got called on, if O'Brien were like, "Oh, hey Seth, do you have a question for me?" I was going to ask, "Tell me about Gilly. Give me the status on Gilly." That was the one in my back pocket. Yeah,
it's good to have a question in your back pocket. That happened to me. Omar accidentally called on me in one of the press conferences, and I think he mistakenly saw me raise my hand. It was somebody else. So he's like, "Sean," and I'm like,
"Yeah, I got nothing."
Good.
You could ask about Gilly.
I could have.
I don't care if it's Whitney Merciless. Ask Whitney about Gilly.
Seth, let's agree that the official back pocket question for you or me, if we're on an O'Brien conference call and we accidentally get called on, Gilly.
It's always got to be Gilly. That's in any situation.
It's got to be. So if you and I are on the press conference and one of us gets called on and we ask a question about Gilly, we'll know that the other one was not expecting to be called on in that situation. Yeah. Seth got called on mistakenly.
Well, no, I'll say that because I do have questions about Gillespie and actually how they're using him as a fullback. Somebody the other day when we were talking about David Johnson being in the two backfield set asked about David Johnson acting as a fullback. I mean, as a rhythm changer or a buster. I think if there's one thing we've learned about Brandon Cooks, David Johnson. Who's the other veteran we've seen?
Randall Cobb.
Yeah, these guys have been working out. They look they look like these older guys, and I don't know, JJ's the same way. I think a lot of the older guys took this as an opportunity to basically get their prison muscles. They've been doing nothing but sitting around and working out 2 times a day during the whole pandemic. Well, you might worry about some of the younger guys. The older guys have just been getting yoked.
So there's the obvious differences with the coronavirus lurking from the time you were a player, Seth. That obviously wasn't the case. The different ways that they're executing the overall daily schedule in groups like this. Other differences that obviously I think are there compared to when you were a player would be that the masks. I mean, you bring up Randall Cobb. There's coaches walking around in masks to the point where Randall Cobb, new to the team and new to his coaching staff, got into a conversation with Tim Kelly while Tim Kelly, his offensive coordinator, while Tim Kelly was wearing a mask. And later on that night, Tim Kelly called Randall Cobb on the phone, and partway through the conversation, Randall Cobb goes, "Hey, just real quick, you were the guy I was talking to in the mask earlier today, right?" Like,
yeah.
That's how weird it is right now, because a lot of these guys that are new don't know, maybe have not seen these guys without masks on, some of their coaches. You know what I mean?
I like that Randall Cobb just went and freely had the conversation with Tim Kelly without knowing for sure who he was, too. That just I feel like Randall Cobb's probably like confessing his sins to random people that he thinks are priests. Hey, by the way, are you a priest?
Right.
You can't say anything about that stuff I just said, right?
I feel like maybe I could email Randall Cobb saying that I'm the son of a deposed ruler in an African nation. Like, Randall Cobb emails me back. Wait, hey, hang on a second. Are you the guy I met in the building today? Wait.
We could kind of, you know, your cover story for that could be is who's the Texans player whose uncle is the president of Liberia?
I don't know.
You don't know that?
No.
it's a fact.
Yeah. Thanks for asking me in front of an audience of thousands.
Well, it's not anything that you would, you know, clearly know. I didn't like ask you, like, what's the capital of Alabama?
No,
I think is Montgomery.
I don't know. I was going to say Birmingham.
I don't know that either. What's the capital of Texas?
Right.
I don't know that.
Okay. So, Seth, what did you think of the O'Brien speeches in this thing? Bill O'Brien talked a lot in front of the team about John Lewis, who passed away last week, who was he was a Martin Luther King associate. He had Chris Singleton in as a Zoom guest, who's the son of a Mother Emanuel church shooting victim, talking about forgiveness. There's some heavy stuff going on in some of these team meetings over there.
Oh, yeah. I think that's, you know, and I don't think that's – I think that's something that Bill O'Brien has done – throughout his career, but I think obviously there's a more of a heavy focus on it now. I think changing with the times is that's an important thing, that especially coaches, as they get older, some can do it and some don't. I think athletes are just way more engaged these days than they used to be, and it's not like that there weren't socially engaged athletes back when I played or back in the 90s or 80s or anything. It just wasn't as common, and it wasn't as out in the open in the locker room. Guys kind of had their life away from the locker room, where maybe they were activists, and then it was different, and the conversation was different in the locker room. So I think O'Brien's done a good job of adapting to the times. And I'm not saying that he's only doing it because of that. I think O'Brien has very strong feelings about a lot of this. But it's just it's become less agnostic when it comes to mixing social and political affairs with the locker room.
Well, I think
go ahead, Sean.
No, that's okay. No, I was going to say, I think the big difference also is it sort of has the stamp of approval top down organizationally with a lot of teams now.
Yeah.
You know, whereas a lot of teams kind of shied away from that kind of thing. The Texans, I know, have been, you know, over the last several months when social justice has sort of risen to the surface. I think they've always done things, been, you know, contributed to charities and things like that that focus on that area, but we're seeing them do more outward things now.
Yeah,
you know?
But it is as far as all the meetings goes, this is the hardest thing to wrap my head around compared to the normal training camp environment, because everything's just so disparate. Yeah. Everything's separated. Nobody's the whole team's not all together at the same time. And I've got to imagine, as a coach, that's got to be the hardest thing when you're trying to, you're trying to use training camp as a time to form some camaraderie, you know, and some team bonds. One of the things that Jeff Kaplan talks about in here, which was really interesting to me, was the psychological stress guys have, like the guilt factor of not wanting to be the guy that lets everybody else down. And that can be, that's a really strong motivating factor. You know, in a team environment, it's getting to know everybody because you want everybody to feel responsible to each other. And I think it's hard to foster that kind of, that bunker mentality of like, hey, it's us against the world, when you can't, like, a lot of these guys would have a hard time placing or even recognizing the faces of some of the rookies because they've been wearing masks the whole time.
John Reed, who is the fourth round corner out of Penn State, who gets a lot of love in this article, he said in this article, Seth, he has met J.J. Watt one time. And it was in passing in the cafeteria. Like, JJ's grabbing a meal, like, hey, what's up? You know, like that kind of thing. By now, they would have been through mini camp together, OTAs together, several workouts together, practice sessions, team meetings that are in the same room with each other, not on a Zoom.
Start to get a feel, like, you start to get an understanding at that point for some of the personalities of the rookies. You know, there's always a rookie that talks too much, but then there's a rookie who talks too much, but he's funny, but it's okay. And then there's, like, the kid that you can tell is just a scrappy little go-getter, and you pick your rookies throughout training camp where there's a kid that you're kind of pulling for, that he's probably not going to make the team, but, man, you really love the way he practices and everything. And I don't know how much of that you're going to get this year. So, look, it's... It doesn't have to all be kumbaya. Every team in the league is going through all of this, but it's one of those differences that if I were a coach, either a position or a head coach, it would stress me the hell out that these guys aren't getting to know each other really.
I haven't heard anything on my COVID test yet, by the way.
I think no news is good news.
That's the case. That's how it is. No, it is. No news is good news. If it's negative, they're not going to tell me. If it's positive, they'll tell me, and they'll tell me to stay the hell away, that kind of thing. I believe is the case.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of suck. You know, not because you have the COVID, but because it'll be...
I don't want to miss training camp. It's going to be an historic training camp. They gave us gift bags yesterday, Seth.
You had a big old sanitization fun pack.
Yeah,
right?
it was like a fruit basket, but with sanitization products.
Yeah.
Some Clorox wipes and some Germ War hand sanitizer, a digital thermometer.
Oral
thermometer. Oral? Yeah, okay. Well, you know, I know you'd ask. You know, oral thermometer.
I can't get over all that bonus structures talk from early in the segment.
That's right. All right. If you want to text the show, 713-572-4610 as Ocho chooses to do at the outset of every show. Sean, can we talk about the embarrassment Pro Football Focus is ranking Kyler Cole Murray in the bottom tier of NFL quarterbacks? Are they just being contrarian? What kind of dumb bleep is that? Ocho and Kyler Murray, man. All right.
Jester Weah, by the way. Jester Weah's uncle was the president of Liberia.
Is he still here? Or is he?
I don't believe so.
Yeah. He was one of those camp crushes for a lot of people. Like, you know who might make the team? Jester Weah. Dallas Braden is the A's television analyst. He was on with the guys in the afternoon yesterday with Clint Sterner and Ron the Show Hughley. He has the reason why the Astros are now mortal. We will let you hear from an opposing TV analyst, a vocal one, next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.